Chef John Faulz welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting and cultural show on radio. It's so nice to have you at the kitchen table with us today. And I'd like to begin by welcoming Michelle Yark, our executive producer. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. Good, and you?
Good week behind you?
It's been a busy 2 weeks and a busy week ahead. You know, a couple of times a year you have the perfect storm where several projects just kind of converge. And
I should mention that Michelle's address is Eye of the Hurricane. Talk about the perfect storm. She's always in a perfect storm. You got stuff coming out of there. Look, it's like, shoo, shoo. You know the sign of the hurricane with them two wings on each side? That's the emblem on the office door. Everybody else has their name, like Dan Ling. John, she's got a hurricane sign on her door.
Hurricane word. That's a good idea. I like that idea.
Anyway, across the glass wall over here, keeping our sound balance and music dynamic, our engineer, Dean Slama. What's going on, Slama?
Hey, Chef. So every season's hurricane season.
Yeah.
Keep it wild.
Sometimes we have Michelle warnings instead of gale warnings.
Oh, yeah, that comes in. We got a big foghorn outside the office that we can press a button when she calls in the morning. We can get her temperature. Like she'll call in to say good morning from the sound of her voice. We know whether to press the horn.
It's kind of good to know my smoke point.
Anyway, y'all, it's great to have all of you here today. Michelle, I saw you got a little box in the other day, and I thought it was cherries, you know.
We put it in the refrigerator.
So they took a box, and I saw it was cherries, and I said, oh, I know what happened. My good friend from California, Laura McIntosh, and Daniel, friends of ours from out that way, he works in a big fruit factory, which I had a chance to visit. They had one of the largest cherry packers in United States. They ship cherries all over the world. When you see cherries in all of our local stores, chances are pretty good Daniel put them in a box. So when I saw that box of cherries sitting on my thing, I said, look at my boy Daniel. Look what he did. But I didn't pursue it any further. I had to leave because I'm always busy. You know what I mean? So I'm always moving. You know?
Staying active.
So, yeah, staying active, trying to make a living, trying to keep these paychecks flowing from Michelle and them, you know. So I got back a couple days later. I went to my refrigerator to check out the cherries, and I didn't see it. And I came up front, and somebody said, oh, no, that was olive oil. That was oils that were shipped in from California to us. So, Michelle, how's my oils?
The oils are wonderful. I have a couple for you to taste here today. But look, how do you like my complexion?
Well, I see you've been using my bottles of oil in your complexion.
No, I have an olive oil face cream.
Oh, is that right?
I've been putting little corners of my eyes.
Is that right?
I was just wondering if I'd put enough for you to notice a difference yet.
Well, yeah, you look just like one of those girls in those commercials. You know what I mean? All the problem is you've been smelling like a salad dressing around here.
Well, now you know why.
As long as she smells like salad when she walks in.
You can smell it over here, yeah.
Well, all kidding aside, though, sometimes it is hard to tell about all of these oils on which aisle they should be on. Should they be on the food aisle or the cosmetic aisle?
Well, and they're beautifully packaged, and they all have different flavors.
And it's not that they're a new thing. They've been around for centuries. It's just that the public is just now becoming more aware of them. They're kind of trendy, and they're in the high-end markets. But even mainstream grocery stores are starting to carry these different types of oils. You can find rows of basic yellow salad oils. You find different seed type oils, nuts, vegetables. It's quite an array.
Well, no, absolutely. And you're right. They have been around for a long time. I mean, nothing's older than olive oil. I mean, the olive press mentioned in the Bible. I mean, olive trees. And so, yeah, absolutely. And most of the nut oils, if you travel to Europe, especially to places like Israel, or you go to places certainly like the south of Italy, you're going to find such an array of oils that it's unimaginable that people would use that many, from all of the walnuts and hazelnuts and olives and just name
it.
And
sesame seeds.
Sesame, no, of course.
Sesame oil.
Black and white sesame oil. I mean, it's unbelievable. Well, you know, if you're talking about oils that come from seeds, probably the oldest processed oil is what you just mentioned, the sesame. It was cultivated during the Indus Valley civilization and was exported to Mesopotamia around 2,500 years before Christ walked the earth. If you can think about that, 2,500 years they were pressing oil. Sesame seeds were one of the first crops produced for oil, as well as one of the earliest condiments. You know, it has a really great flavor and is mostly associated with Asian food. Sesame oil doesn't require extensive purification and after extraction from the seeds because it already has that really pleasant taste. But extracting the oil from the seeds is really a big manual deal. I mean, a lot of labor-intensive product, but nothing I love more than to go to these countries and see the shelves of all these wonderful. I'll buy a bottle of every single one imagined, including sesame.
And sesame oil, like you said, is most popular in Asia. And you might say that it's comparable to olive oil usage in the Mediterranean.
That's a great point. Great point.
The more refined sesame oils are lighter in color. They have a higher smoke point. And the higher smoke point is what makes them really suitable for deep frying. The darker oils that come from roasted sesame seeds have a lower smoke point. And that's generally used for stir frying.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you can tell when you walk into an Asian restaurant, you know you're in Asia. You can smell that sesame everywhere. And I'm glad you brought up smoke point because the smoke point is the temperature, that, just as you said, at which oil will start to smoke when it's heated. I mean, take butter, for instance. That's an oil. That's a fat. You put it in a skillet and you turn that fire on. In 5 minutes, it's going to start to, because it melts at 75, 80 degrees. You put a piece of butter in your hand at 98, it melts all over your hand. So you can imagine what happens when it gets to 150. We fry at 375. So oil starts to decompose under extreme heat, and the antioxidants are replaced by what they call free radicals and other dangerous molecules. The smoke itself is toxic, and you shouldn't even breathe the smoke coming out of oils on the stove. That's why smoke point is so important in determining which oil you're going to use in a recipe. Oils with a smoke point ranging between 280 and 400 should not be used for frying, but it's great for like baking and for sauteing a piece of fish. I mean, just think about it. Like I say, if you're going to fry a fish, you're going to set that thermometer at a minimum of 375. So you're already on the higher end of that 400 range. And use them when you want, you know, like a more robust oil flavor in your dish, and when the oil is an integral part of the flavor, that's when you're going to try to use those oils, you know.
And you know what I've been seeing a lot of lately is coconut oil. Some people are claiming it's kind of a miracle oil for its health benefits. In getting ready for the show, I counted no less than 31 books on Amazon about coconut oil. It's versatile, high smoke point that's as great for baking cookies as well as adding an essence of coconut flavor to something like pan-fried plantains and even Louisiana sweet potatoes. Room temperature coconut oil is solid and can even be used instead of butter on your toast. I can't attest to all the claims, but many people who cook gluten-free are even using coconut oil. Now, I haven't tasted it yet.
It's a good oil. I've tasted it. I have some in the kitchen here. If you want to taste it.
Does it taste like coconut?
Nope.
Good, because I'm not a coconut fan.
Well, yeah, but you don't like string coconut. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a big fan of olive
You're
oil.
Right.
And, of course, I have an olive orchard. Out there as well. In Donaldsonville, I have about 300 trees. But there's another oil that's taking the cooking world by storm. And in fact, I used it yesterday on television, and that's avocado oil. It has the highest smoke point of all oils between 490 and 510, and is a great choice for baking as well as deep frying. And it is monounsaturated. It's an unsaturated fat.
You know, avocado oil is somewhat new to the cooking world, kind of like coconut oil, but it's become really popular over the past 10 years. You wonder why it hasn't been around longer, considering how versatile it is. Smooth, buttery flavor, and it's a delicious dip for breads. It's a good marinade mixed with spices for meats. It's great over fresh salad, health benefits outrank other oils because the more heat an oil can stand means there are fewer unhealthy free radicals released into your food.
That's exactly right. And like I said, my go-to oil, of course, is always a really good olive oil. And, of course, I love the rich flavor that it adds to everything from cooking to being mixed with vinegars for salad dressings, obviously. The smoke point is medium, though, so you don't want to fry with it. But when I do want to saute with it, I always add a little bit of a corn oil or something too, because I can pick up the flavor of the olives, but yet I can raise the smoke point of that oil. But I tell you what, it's hard to find a better dipping oil. That's why you find it on the table alongside butter for French bread in a lot of our restaurants. It's interesting to note that great olive oils come from countries other than Italy. Italy isn't your top producer. The countries in the Mediterranean region are all olive rich, and olive oils from Greece have that delicious, complex, sometimes very sweet flavor. 80% of Grecian olive oil production is purchased by Spain and Italy. But regardless of the country of origin, virgin and extra virgin olive oil is perfect for infusing with fresh herbs, especially those from my garden. I like to do some really nice herbs in a bottle and then cover it with olive oil and just let it infuse, like basil and tarragon and things like that. I like throwing rosemary into those bottles as well, and that's really good when you're cooking lamb. If you want to saute lamb chops, you already have that rosemary infused.
I have a lot of rosemary.
Well, yeah.
I may need to start infusing.
Just infuse a good bottle of olive oil. Yeah, just go to the store and get you a nice big bottle of just one of the real nice green, and look for the acidity, less than 1%. Put a couple sprigs of that tarragon in there, or that rosemary.
Yeah.
The heartier herb blends beautifully with the strong flavor of good quality olive oil, and again, perfect for dipping bread. Just if you want to sit around there, kind of watch a little TV and dip a little bread, you're not hungry for anything else. Nothing better than a good rosemary or basil infused olive oil and a little chunk of bread, huh?
That sounds delicious. I have something for the listeners, because we've been talking a lot about smoke points and all these different kind of oils, and it can be kind of confusing. We're going to put on the guest and goodies part of today's show a guide on smoke points and how to use. So the high heat oils, avocado, almond, canola, sesame, we'll have these. We'll have the smoke point. It's a great chart. And it also tells you the application, the purpose, best purpose for cooking. So it's really a handy guide, especially if you want to experiment a little bit with some of these more unusual oils.
Anyway, y'all, Dean's telling me it's time for us to shut up and take a break here, because that's what he said. I can hear him. But anyway, he's telling us to take a quick break. So y'all, we're going to be back in a little bit, and we have a lot more to talk about all, and a great guest.
Omega oil is good for rheumatism, so they declare. And olive oil is good upon a salad, also on the hair. Though we know that castor oil always cures the pain, banana oil is something new. So just let me explain.
Glide through your weekday mornings at 11 a.m. here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. I'm Cecil Doyle. Mondays through Thursdays, we cruise through a fast-paced hour of sounds both old and new, as well as keeping you up to date with area music and arts. The Medicine Ball Caravan, 11 to noon weekdays here on KRVS.
Our music on the Thistle and Shamrock transcends boundaries, expands horizons, celebrates tradition, stimulates innovation. It's music to bring people together, so why don't you join us?
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we have Eric Gills at the Levitt Shell in Memphis, Tennessee. Then we'll hop on the legendary Rhythm and Blues Cruise and hear from Johnny Taylor's little girl, Tasha Taylor. That plus our feature host, Barbara Ching, continues her look at country music and the blues. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Burning the midnight oil.
Slama, I kept waiting to hear something about olive oil or something about burning the midnight oil. How do you come up with a Dolly Parton song or whatever for this olive oil show, huh? You know, you're something else.
Yeah, it's a classic, though. I mean, we're grooving, we're tapping our cowboy boots.
Burning the midnight oil.
Dolly didn't sing about olive oil.
Anyway, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. Do you know, Slama, we're celebrating about our 60th, what is this, our 16th year in radio?
Yep.
16 years. Can you imagine that people actually think this is serious stuff? Huh?
Fooling everybody.
Fooling everybody for 16 years talking about food. Anyway, I'm Chef John Falls, and welcome back. And, of course, Michelle Yark sitting next to me, and Dean Slama keeping us alive and well. So, Michelle, we have a great guest, but before we introduce him, you had left Leon with the big Paul Bocuse competition we had a couple of years ago when I was U.S. judge, right?
That's right. And well, I was there for a while, sent the rest of us home.
Yeah, Slama,
I think we
Slama,
misbehaved
I took,
or something.
Slama, I took 20. Now, imagine this, my generosity, right? I took 20 of my staff, including Miss Yark here, to France. And, you know, a little Paris and a little this and a little that, and then a ride down to Lyon for the big Bocuse d'Or competition a couple of years ago. And then they left me there alone. Remember when I went on the bus and told all of you bye, huh? Remember
that? Was a very sad part.
That was a sad part. Everybody was gone except me.
And it was snowing.
It was snowing in Lyon.
How romantic.
Well, the whole reason for this story is because the minute they left, I said, yay! And then I jumped.
And we did too.
Oh, boy.
And we jumped in my driver's car, and we took off to an oil pressing factory that I had been told about, right next to George DeBerf Winery. And that day they were pressing about 9 or 10 in these ancient press that they had, that these beautiful old hydraulic, well, they had been converted to hydraulic press. And they were doing all of these magnificent flavors, these bright green hazelnuts and walnuts and almonds and all of these. And the fragrance in that thing was unbelievable. And I brought back bottles of all of these.
So as you did?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I brought you some, didn't
you? No, I don't believe so.
You know why? Because you left early.
Ooh.
You sent me home.
Anyway, that's what I started to tell you earlier before we took a break, is that my greatest memory of multiple oils, not only olive, but all of these beautiful oils that were foreign to me at the time, was being pressed in this little factory in Lyon. And, you've never seen or experienced or just smell the fragrance, the aroma of those oils coming out of those ancient press were just absolutely incredible. So you must go back.
Well, I will put that on my list.
Anyway, introduce our guest today, because we missed him when we were over there last week or week before last or whenever we were there. And I wish I'd have seen him personally, but we have him with us today.
Absolutely. We have with us Executive Chef Eric Maxco of Round Pond Estate in Rutherford, California.
What a beautiful place. You know, look, I thought they had just gotten in wine. They've been in wine since 2002. Go to show you what I know, right? I'm more concentrating on the olives, right?
Well, and, you know, this is in the Napa Valley. Chef Eric oversees menus and wine pairings for Round Pond Estates for their extensive wine and food programs. In his other role, he creates innovative uses for the various estate oils made at Round Pond Olive Mill, which we saw. He offers insight into flavor combinations and flavor infusions, and we even have what I think are samples of some of his work. Chef Eric is dedicated to the concept of farm-to-table dining and brings that mission to Round Pond through creating original dishes from the produce of on-site organic olive orchards, the estate olive oils, citrus syrups, red wine vinegars. Now, prior to joining Round Pond, he served as executive chef at the historic Pine Ridge Winery, where he developed a style based on the marriage of classic French cuisine to contemporary California fare. He attended the University of Hartford in Connecticut before earning his degree from the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. He is a certified sommelier and is now putting his extensive wine pairing experience to use in the olive orchard. Chef Eric, welcome to Stirring It Up. We're delighted to have you with us today.
Thank you very much.
And Eric, let me congratulate you on all of the work that you're doing. I mean, my God, when first an executive chef, I mean, graduating from University of Hartford prior to that, a sommelier, my God, what do you do in your spare time?
Well, I work really hard at home on my own little vineyard in my backyard and my own beautiful little garden.
Now, I just found out that you're from New Jersey originally. Was moving out to California happenstance, or was that part of your plan to get out there? What brought you to the West Coast?
Definitely part of my plan. I always knew I wanted to live and work in a wine-producing region somewhere in the world because it has the best weather and the best views, I think. And you also get to mix it up between, you know, great wines produced regionally and great produce and fruits and vegetables grown locally.
Well, you know, with your background as a som, I mean, it seems certainly a logical step to work with all of these pairings of flavors, oils in cooking, and how oils attribute quality to foods. Tell us a little bit, is there a similarity between the infusions of these flavors in oil as it is producing or qualifying great wines?
I think so. In a lot of ways, great oils are blended from different varieties. Oftentimes you'll see single variety olive oils produced and bottled, but just like a single varietal Cabernet or Merlot, it may be lacking something. So oftentimes I would look at from the perspective of blending creates a more consistent product as well as a more rounded out product.
Now, can you tell us a little bit, just to bring our audience back to Round Pond itself, tell us a little bit about how long they've been in the olive oil business. When did they start the press that they have there? Because I was there about, oh, maybe 10 years ago, and maybe it was brand new at that time that they had put in that beautiful mill that they had there, that Frantoia, as we call it. But tell us a little bit about them getting started in olive oil and then, of course, putting a mill and bringing the public to see the process. When did all that happen?
Well, Round Pond Estate is a family-owned winery, and it's a 450-acre parcel of land right in the middle of Rutherford. It was founded by Bob and Jan McDonald in 1983 as a way to kind of have a place for their family to kind of vacation and have holidays. But it's the two eldest children, Ryan and Miles McDonald, who run the property now, brother and sister. And Ryan McDonald is in charge of all of orchards grown organically, as well as the processing and pressing of the individual varietals and the blending of the oils and the infusions, as you were just talking about. So Ryan started with the mill when it was built in 2006, literally directly behind her home and adjacent to our organically farmed olive orchard. All the equipment was brought in from Pirelisi in the south of Italy and installed there with the intent of pressing exclusively estate olives. Two different presses. We have a traditional granite press, which is those big milling wheels that you see in old historic Greek photos. And we have a more traditional, more modern, what we would call hammer mill, which is an enclosed mill for utilizing for a different style of oil or a different variety of olive.
The olive groves at Round Pond are just absolutely beautiful. How many different types of olives or countries of origin that y'all grow there on the estate?
Well, we grow Spanish varieties, three of which, Mission, Manzanilla, and Seviano. And we grow five Italian varieties here on the property, Pendolino, Frantoia, Licino, Murano, and Coratina, all Tuscan cultivars. We harvest them separately. We process them separately. And we're talking about within just a couple of hours of picking the last olive, we have the first droplets of beautiful, fresh golden green extra virgin olive oil coming out the back of the presses and going to stainless steel tanks to be held under argon gas, waiting the next variety to be pressed, and then later the varieties to be blended together and bottled periodically throughout the year. That's an important thing for us to do, is bottle either biannually or quarterly as we need fresh oil. The freshness of the product and the shelf life is always kind of going down the longer it's been in bottle or the longer it's been exposed to oxygen. So a big part of what we do is bottle on demand the individual oils as finished blends. So we blend the Spanish varieties together. We make a Spanish blended oil. We blend the Italian varieties together and make an Italian blended oil.
So what is it that makes Napa Valley ideal for growing olives? I mean, somebody says Napa Valley, I automatically think wine, not olive. But obviously, y'all are having a lot of success.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's a new revolution going on here. I think a lot of it comes down to the climate, and the climate of Napa Valley is very much akin to what you would find in Tuscany, where some of the great olive oils of Italy are coming from.
You know, when I think of a lot of the great olive oils, too, Tunisian or even Israeli, you know, some of the oils there, Spanish, Italian, what is the biggest taste difference for you between oils? Are they that distinctive from country to country when we say this is a great? Because I'm sure the public in general thinks of, okay, Italian oil, even though certainly Italian isn't the largest volume of olive oil. How different is the flavors from country to country or variety to variety?
I think I would put it to you in this way. It's the same way that Cabernet Sauvignon tastes different grown in Bordeaux than it does in Maremma on the Bulgari coast of Tuscany, as it would if it were grown in Israel, as it would if it were grown here in Napa Valley. So the regionality, soil conditions, and what the French would refer to as terroir and how it affects grapes also affects olives themselves. So if we just wanted to come to Round Pond and taste our two major oils, the Spanish and the Italian, I would tell you the major difference would be the pungency of the Italian, having a little bit more of a peppery bite in the back of the throat. It's pretty typical. The Spanish comes through with more kind of grassy qualities, kind of herbaceous notes in the nose, and then more buttery characteristics on the palate and probably less spicy.
Is any one of them for you personally? I mean, obviously you think of these for different needs, I'm sure. But if you sit down to say, okay, I need to choose an oil that's for you as a chef, do you have a preference?
I definitely utilize the Italian more in culinary applications or dressing salads and bitter greens and things like that than the Spanish. But if a cuisine were directly derived from something Spanish, let's say bacalao, I would definitely use the Spanish oil on the dish.
What about the flavoring that y'all have? Because that was one thing when we were there. There were so many different applications of the olive oil, the garlic, the basil, the rosemary, even blood orange. Is that something that y'all do there? Is this something that you kind of inspired, or how did that kind of come about? And how do you use them?
So to speak of the blood orange and the Meyer lemon infused oils, these are made in a natural cold pressed infusion method. So as we're pressing the Italian olives in the traditional granite mill, we're also juicing by hand the Meyer lemons and blood oranges, much of which we grow on the estate here. We grow all that citrus. We're juicing them. We're keeping that juice, and we're utilizing that for a different product. You mentioned the syrups earlier. That's where that juice goes to made into the syrup. But the rinds themselves get tossed into the granite mill. So while we're pressing the olives into mash, we're also pressing the rinds of the citrus and extracting the oils from the rinds, and it's combining with the oils of the olives.
That's incredible. So is that going, you mentioned a minute ago the granite wheels versus the hammer mill. I didn't realize that you were actually putting the orange rind or the lemon rind directly in with the olives. Is that being just kind of sent through those big wheels, or is that part of the hammer, or is it both? I mean, how are you extracting
it? It goes
that?
Through. It gets mashed up by the granite milling wheels. So after that, what happens to most of the mash is it gets fed off of the milling wheel line, and it goes through a number of centrifuges. And the centrifuge is a pretty typical process in olive oil making. The centrifuge is one horizontal and also vertical. Spin away the solid material, and that goes to compost. It also spins away the water, and it isolates small droplets of olive oil, in this case it would be citrus oils too, so that they find each other and form larger droplets, and that's what we're trying to isolate through the centrifuging process, and that's what we isolate at the very end of the process.
Wow, I just took a taste of your blood orange olive oil.
Literally just took a taste. I opened it, Chef, and he took a swig.
I took a swig out of the top of it. My God, I'm amazed at just how pronounced the orange flavor is in it, but yet not overpowering. I could still taste the peppery oil coming through the back note as well.
Well, I cooked with the garlic olive oil the other day, and I was shocked, you know, because a lot of times you think, oh, yeah, okay, olive oil with garlic. It was, just as you said, very pronounced. I mean, you can definitely taste it. You can definitely smell it as you're cooking.
Yeah, one of the oils that we make that I call the Weekend Warrior oil is the garlic oil. I mean, any guy with a six-pack of beer and a nice fired-up grill can put that right in the rail of his grill next to his beer, and you'll find a dozen uses for it in one single weekend.
It's amazing.
Chef, with the varieties, and I'm not sure there's growing techniques, but with the amount of varieties going on there, are y'all putting in any regulatory, is there any boards or any something to determine labeling from the region of selling oils from the area? What's happening in that respect to say, okay, you know Spain, you know Italy, but this is oils grown from those varieties in Napa. Is there any processing going on to certify that product that's coming from your area?
There is. The California Olive Council certifies our oil, and we're giving a plaque that we display in the mill that states that all of our oils are of extra virgin quality. And that way people understand, if they understand the process of producing extra virgin quality oils, they understand that it goes through a tasting panel where professional olive oil tasters will taste the oil and look for specific characteristics like spiciness that you were just talking about, pungency, herbaceous characteristics, or fruity characteristics. And these are signs of high-quality oil, an oil that meets the health benefits determined as extra virginity. Also, there's a chemical analysis of the oil to determine whether there's anything blended into it. And I would tell you that infused oils, although they could be of extra virgin quality, cannot carry the designation of extra virgin, because extra virgin olive oil, by definition, can only be made from olives and not from anything else added into it.
For our listeners, terms like extra virgin versus virgin, just to clarify that for our listeners, would you just touch on those?
So extra virgin internationally is recognized as the oil having less than, I believe it's 0.8% folic acid. So that's testable and determinable amount of acidity in the oil. Most people would tell you that at 0.8%, the acid level in the oil is very high. Our extra virgins, our Italian and our Spanish, generally come through at around 0.02. So we're talking about 0.02% versus the threshold of 0.8%.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. Above 0.8%, you get into the world of virgin oil.
Chef, tell us about the tours that y'all offer, because that is an interesting and unusual one.
Yeah, so a big part of what we do here at Round Pond, besides making wine and making oil, is to utilize these products in a composed set of food and wine events. So 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, we do lunch here at the winery, which includes a tasting of olive oil. It includes a tour of the production facility, as well as a tour of our biodynamically farmed estate garden. Three times a day, we do something similar and a little bit more scaled down, which is probably what you saw over at the mill. So we call it the mill tour, but it's also inclusive of a very light lunch, mainly composed of fruits and or vegetables from our biodynamically farmed gardens on the property. Gives people a way to not only just simply sit and taste the oils themselves, but also use them in a food application that we would recommend so that you derive the greatest health benefits out of the products.
Chef, we're going to take a quick break. Would you mind hanging over just for a minute? I have a couple more questions just about the property itself and how people can access your product.
No sweat. I'm here.
Okay, guys. We'll be back in just a minute.
Oh, doctor, dear doctor, oh, doctor, dear John, your cod liver oil is so pure and so strong. I'm afraid of me life, I'll go down in the soil.
More on the stories from National Public Radio News, as well as streaming audio at KRVS's website at krvs.org.
You've heard this song, but did you know its origins is in Afro-Mexican music? Join me for La Bamba, the Afro-Mexican story, as we explore Mexico's black history through sound. Next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Move to KRVS every Sunday night for 2 hours of hardcore classic Rasta reggae radio right here on Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights 9 to 11 p.m., Saturday mornings 1 to 3 here on KRVS, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Everybody, welcome back to Starting It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. And today, Michelle, we're lucky to have a great guest and just took a tour of their facility, in fact, in Rutherford. And 450 acres, that seems to be a huge piece of property. And it's just beautiful. Remember, I showed you the house with the big palm trees in the front?
Yes.
I said I was almost kicked off of the property, and I went to take pictures of the house one day a couple of years ago.
I bet you were.
And that ended up being the boss. That ended up being the boss around pond there. So,
today, our guest is Executive Chef Eric Maxco of Round Pond Estate, as you said, in Rutherford. He's in charge of the menus, the wine pairings, the extensive wine and food programs there. He's a sommelier, does a whole lot with the olive oils, which is what we're talking with him about today.
He's a very busy guy. And Chef, thank you so much for being with us and also for hanging in over that little commercial there. We appreciate it a lot. Round Pond, we know, has received, you know, so many accolades in the media as a destination as well. As the chef there, if you only had a few hours to spend on your property, what are you suggesting to the visitor? How did he get the most out of the experience around Pond?
I think the best experience we can offer is probably our Sunday brunch, which includes a tour of the facilities, olive oil tasting, a demonstration in the kitchen, tours of our gardens, and a relatively extensive lunch itself. So it's not a traditional brunch where it's served like, you know, pancakes and eggs and that kind of thing. More of a lunch that we start with scones made from fruit from the gardens. We take everyone on a tour down to the garden itself where we give them baskets, and if they want to, they're welcome to do some harvesting of some vegetables and or fruits. And we bring that back up to the kitchen where we can host up to 12 people in the kitchen. And I'll do a cooking demonstration for them. I'll take the products that we harvested. I'll implement them in the lunch itself. And we talk extensively about food and wine pairing. A big part of what we do on our terrace is composed food and wine pairings for the guests when they want to come and taste wine. It's called an estate tasting, which is a very fun way to spend an hour or so of viewing the vineyards from above. Our brunch itself is mainly a conversation about food and wine pairings and the principles thereof. I really love being in the garden with guests and getting them to smell herbs and taste things down there to wake up their olfactory, wake up their senses. And get them to understand that oftentimes flavors that overlap between food and wine can tend to mute each other. And so we put those principles into effect up in the kitchen during the demonstration portion, and I'll pass around things that may be salty, maybe acidic, maybe fatty, and we can see how that relates to characteristics and structure in the wine. Once we've broken out of the kitchen, I get everyone sat down at the table out in the middle of the terrace with a beautiful view of the 400 acres of the estate vineyard here. And we'll serve in a family style, almost Italian style, the brunch itself, platters of composed dishes. I'll explain where the oils were utilized throughout the process and where other estate products were used and which wine it's meant to pair with.
Wow, that sounds
like a great experience.
I'm in. One last question, and then we'll let you go. I know that the Crushers is around the corner, and, of course, olive harvesting season is around the corner. Do you all allow, I know it's a busy time, and to be able to watch the processing of the olives being crushed, brought into the mill there, is that something that's open to the public during the season?
It is. As you know, Chef, hospitality is our business up here in Napa Valley. And we welcome visitors during the olive harvest and olive pressing days. And we do fresh olive oil tasting days where you can come in and taste out of the individual tanks, the individual varieties before they're fully blended. It gives people an opportunity to see the difference between oils that have been bottled and on the shelf for some time, which you see in your supermarket, and freshly pressed olive oil, significant difference health benefit-wise, as well as aromatic and flavor profile-wise.
Do you have an anticipated time that the olives are going to be ready for crushing this year? About when do y'all start every year?
I would say just after Thanksgiving and before Christmas is probably the ideal window for guests to come and enjoy the fresh-pressed olive oils and see the processing of the olives themselves. But the easy thing would be to give us a call or send us an email, and we can make you aware of which days in that particular week when you might be up here in the valley that we'd have something available for you to view.
Well, great. And, folks, I want all of you to know that we'll have all of Round Pond Estates and all of Chef Eric's information on our website. If you go to www.jfalls.com, jfalls.com, you'll find it all right there. And having been to Round Pond Estates a couple of times, I can tell you there's no better place to visit. There's more action going on there. There's more education going on there than you'll find on many of the tours in Napa. So I know that Michelle and I both recommend it very, very highly. And I'm just sorry we didn't get a chance to see you personally when we were there, but I guarantee you we'll be back in September for the big Staglin Vineyard event in the Vineyard for Mental Health. So we're going to make sure we give you a call and come by and meet you and just get a little personal taste of your goods over there, okay?
Thank you, Chef. It was a pleasure.
Well, it's all my pleasure, and hope to see you in Louisiana sometime. Now, Michelle, talking about all of this, any books on the subject?
Are we gonna jump right in? Kidding? Yes, indeed. Well, considering what a great education we got today about olive oil, I thought I'd recommend a great book, The Flavors of Olive Oil, A Tasting Guide and Cookbook. It was written by Deborah Krasner, and if you love wine tastings and want to expand your knowledge about olive oil, this book tells you how to start. The first half of the book teaches about the grades of olive oil, how to decipher those tricky labels and kind of separate fact from some of the hype. The author gives tips on how to hold your own tasting, your own olive oil tasting, how to recognize the oils from their different countries of origin. The second half of the book is full of delicious recipes for everything from salads and breads to main course meats. This book will make absolute olive oil guru out of you. And the second book that I wanted to recommend is titled Flavored Oils, 50 Recipes for Cooking with Infused Oils.
Which is what you have right there from Round Pond.
That's exactly right. This book was written by Michael Chiarello. He has a line of gourmet-infused oils, and in this book, he tells you how to use your fresh herbs and spices so that you can create your own delicious flavored oils. He includes recipes for marinades, for dressings and sauces, and main meal recipes. The book is full of beautiful color photos and a lot of inspiration for you to get out there and snip some fresh herbs and make your own flavored oils.
Michelle, I'm looking at the book, The Flavors of Olive Oils, a tasting guide and cookbook that you just mentioned. And there's I'm looking at this recipe for oven-roasted asparagus with olive oil drizzle. What'd you think so far?
I'm hungry.
White bean puree with olive oil, sage, and garlic. Ooh. Think about that.
Ooh.
A little saltwater poached white beans, and then cool them down and drizzle a little sage and garlic oil like you have in that bottle right there. Oh.
I'm going to tell you what, these infused olive oils are really, really delicious. Salama, you're going to have to come over here and get a whiff and
a taste
because they are really special. So when are you going to start infusing olive oils?
I've already done it.
You have?
Yep, that's right. Hmm?
Yeah.
I do it every time I throw olive oil in the skillet and throw garlic in it. I infuse. Anyway, y'all, all of those books, as Michelle said, will be on the website so you can get all of that information. Salama, what about our Facebook
page?
Yeah,
Facebook. We're at facebook.com/stirringitupradio, and that's stirring without a G. That is our little Facebook page.
Anything happening exciting? Anything going on
that?
Yeah,
anybody? We're posting pictures. Like just the other week, we posted those pictures of the spoils of the harvest of those heritage breed
pigs,
pigs
that we raise. Yeah, Chef raised, very humanely raised, beautiful pigs. We had the large black, we had the Berkshire, and we had the Osabaw. And we raised them from 100 pounds up to the large was 375. And the Osabaw was almost 200. and just went ahead and harvested them for the winter season. We're putting them up into salumis and all of that. That salumis takes about 3 or 4 months of aging. Mm-hmm. All of our different meats and hams. I'm curing some sugar-cured, steamed cane syrup-infused hams that we're going to be slicing for the holidays. So it takes a little while. You got to make some of this stuff in advance, you know.
So it's an investment of time. Yeah. Yeah.
And then we're going to put 2 to 3 more little heritage hogs in our pen over at White Oak Plantation Farm. And if you go to White Oak Plantation site on the website, you'll see the hog pens, and you'll see the hogs, and you'll see the chickens, and you'll see all of our heritage breeds out there. But we're going to put 3 more out for the boucherie in January, Michelle. So we're going to back up 4 months, January, December, November, October.
Yeah.
October the 1st, the new hogs come in.
Man, and we're getting set up already.
All acorn fed this time.
Oh, and really?
All acorn.
No way?
No way. We're going to do all acorn fed. In fact, what we're going to do, Michelle, from day one, our little farmer over there is going to train the hogs to walk from the pen to the oak trees, because you know how many oak trees we have there, right?
Lots.
And when they find those acorns.
Oh, boy.
Those hogs are going to go crazy. But the meat from the acorn, I mean, talking about, olive oil and all of that, the meat from the acorn is the same thing. I mean, infusing the flavor in the meat. And Michelle, I have a great dish here. And I'll tell you, I really love this because it's simple to do. People are astounded when they taste the finished product. And it's really unbelievable. I think I'm going to do my lemon olive oil cake.
I knew you were going to pick that one.
Why?
Just because.
Well,
you
can also do it with orange. That's what I like. You can do the orange or satsuma olive oil cake. The fact is that
it's a great cake.
Oh, the ultimate light pound cake. Mm-hmm. Very light and very, because the fat in this cake is, instead of being a shortening, like say a Crisco or butter or something like that, this cake will have olive oil as the fat. So not only do you have that wonderful, wonderful fresh olive oil flavor, but then you have the zest and the juice of whatever citrus fruit you want. I'm going to use lemon here. But if you have a satsuma tree, you can use satsumas or orange tree. Blood orange is beautiful in this cake as well. This is a good cake to travel. Like if you're going to, let's say you're going to somebody's house for something, you're going to bring a little dessert, this is the one to bring.
This is the one.
Well, it's unique, it's interesting, and all you need to do is bring a little dollop of whipped cream.
Is it hard to make?
Very simple to make. That's what I love about it. Okay. You're going to love this cake for 2 things, Michelle. Things you like, simplicity, versatility. It's light. It's got a fruity taste to it. A nice cup of cafe au lait. It's a good morning treat as well. Whatever's left over, if any.
Yeah.
You have with your coffee. You ready?
Yep.
All right, y'all. For the ingredients, you will, well, first of all, preheat your oven to 350. You always want to do that. And you want to grease a 9-inch spring farm pan and line the bottom with parchment paper. You with me?
Yes.
So it's all greased and ready to go. Preheat that oven to 350. Now, y'all, this is what you're going to do. And I like to do this on an electric mixer, actually. You're going to go ahead and zest a lemon. You know, you want to have the zest of, you're going to have about 2 tablespoons, let's say, of grated lemon zest. Yeah, 1.5 tablespoons minimum, Then you're going to have 1.5 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice. You with me?
Uh-huh.
Okay. 3/4 cup of a good olive oil. Okay, just a good olive oil. Italian is perfect for this. You're going to have 1 cup of cake flour. You with me?
Uh-huh.
You're going to have 5 large eggs separated. 3/4 cup plus 1.5 tablespoons of sugar. You're going to divide it. Mm-hmm. 3/4 cup over here. 1.5 tablespoons over here, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. You with me? Now, once you grease the spring farm pan and you put the parchment paper in the bottom, then you're going to mix that lemon zest with the flour, and you're going to set it aside. And then in a large mixing bowl, you're going to combine the egg yolks and 1/2 cup of the sugar. You're going to use your electric mixer, or you can have a stand mixer, and you're going to beat the egg mixture with the sugar on high speed until you get this really nice, thick, pale yellow-looking mixture. That's going to take about 3 minutes. You're going to reduce that speed to medium, and then you're going to slowly add in a stream the olive oil in the recipe, as well as the lemon juice, and you're going to continue to beat until it all is combined. Now, it may appear to separate a little bit because the olive oil can separate out of the mixture, but that's all right. Don't worry about it. Just use a wooden spoon, you know, and just kind of keep mixing it. Then with that wooden spoon, you're going to blend in the flour just until combined. You don't want to beat that. You just want to kind of slowly mix it in. In a separate large bowl with a clean beaters, you never want to put any egg or fat into egg whites. With a clean beater, you're going to beat the four egg whites and the salt on medium-high heat until foamy. And then once you kind of get those bubbles on top of it, you're going to add 1/4 cup of sugar, a little at a time, and continue to beat until you get these really beautiful egg whites forming these nice soft peaks. It's going to take about 3 minutes for that as well. Then you're going to gently fold 1/3 of the egg whites into that yolk flour mixture and then fold the remaining in. That first group just kind of loosens it up a little bit. Then you're going to transfer the batter into the springform pan, and you're going to gently tap it on the surface to make it nice and level and release any bubbles. You're going to sprinkle the remaining sugar on the top. You're going to bake in the center of the oven for 45 minutes until puffed and golden brown. The toothpick comes out clean. You're going to cool the cake completely for about 10-15 minutes. Run a knife around the edge and remove the sides and cool it to room temperature before serving. Ice cream, whipped cream, fruit, jellies, jams, preserves. Make this cake go crazy. Y'all enjoy it. Olive oil is in. See you next week.